Hi, it's good to have your company. My name's Simon Smart. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Tony Goldsby-Smith is the co-founder and chairman of Second Road. It's a strategy and innovation firm that seeks to unlock and empower imagination and intelligence so that organisations can thrive. Tony is a deep theological thinker, and he believes that his understanding of theology has something to say about design thinking in contemporary situations. When I spoke with Tony recently, we had a wide-ranging conversation about God and creativity, modern business practices, and the wisdom of the Bible as it applies to every area of life. A really important part of Christian teaching is that all people are made in the image of God. So I began by asking Tony what he took that to mean. This is what he had to say.
Well, I think the most important and obvious meaning of it is that we're distinctive. And by that I mean we are somehow or other at the epitome of the life forces on the planet. So life's a magnificent, miraculous thing that we all share in different ways. But human beings, and we share lots of that with, so I share aspects of life, as an example, with a flower. And I share aspects of life with an animal. But there are certain aspects of life that I don't share with animals or anybody else. And those aspects of life are what make me distinctly human. So as an example, I have two lungs. All animals have two lungs. There's no difference there. And it's this power for consciousness, at least, is definitely one of those distinctions where I don't just participate in life, but I stand back and reflect. Now, I view that as a God factor. I'm actually, in that particular attribute, I'm closer to God. In fact, I'm so close to God that I participate in his nature.
In what way do you think human creativity is part of reflecting this image of God status?
Well, that's a big question. First of all, capacity. You know, what capacity allows me to be creative in a way that I would maintain a beaver building a dam is not being creative in the same way that somebody writing a symphony or somebody telling a story or so there's a capacity I have that enables me to make new things, and not just any kind of new things but very deliberate new things. And that capacity is the ability for reflective thought. You actually can't make something unless you can actually have, as my wonderful grandson told me once when he was six, "Grandpa, it's amazing. There's you and then there's yourself." And this capacity to reflect, i.e. stand outside of myself, look back at myself, enables me to have the space to then manipulate life, manipulate products and services. It's an extraordinary capability. So that I see as God-given. I also see it importantly, so that's a faculty, that lets me be creative. But in terms of role or mandate, what I see that we're on the earth to do is to continue the creative reverberations that God began. So the task we're involved in of enterprise, creativity and art, in fact, we are sub-creators, we are sub-gods doing it.
Yeah, so I wonder if you could show us how you apply that type of thinking to, for instance, design, which is a lot of the work that you're involved with.
Well, it's absolutely central, because what we would claim is that the capacity to shape new things is therefore almost the noblest, most defining, exhilarating aspect of being human. Now, we work in major change with corporations, and our goal is to help corporations transform from the industrial model, which saw human beings as resources. It's a terrible word. It means we're expendable machines. Only giving energy to the enterprise. So we want to turn from that to what we call the authorised organisation, an organisation of authors, where people are at an appropriate level and way shaping, be it processes, products and problem solving.
Yeah, so work you would see as part of being made in God's image, right? That we're made to be workers.
Yeah, work's a word with a double meaning. At one level, and probably mostly in the common mind, it's actually seen as negative. It's effect of the curse. You know, I work, a lot of Christians would say that, you know, that the reason we're not sort of sitting around, you know, sipping lemonade or angels flapping wings. We got to work is because of sin, you know, or else people equally who might not have a faith would equally say, you know, work's a drudge, it's problem solving, etc. And I just reject all of those. I think they're entirely secondary. I think that work, defined as I've just defined it in theological terms, work began in Genesis 1 and 2 before the, you know, before sin entered the world. So work is a pre-sin condition. It's close to the heart of who we are and will continue on forever, which is very interesting. I think enterprise, initiative will continue on into whatever future destiny we have.
Do you think there's a cumulative aspect to this made in the image of God, or seeing, like for instance, the combined efforts of humanity rather than in an individual? We see it most clearly in those combined efforts. I'm thinking things like bridges and, you know, computers and amazing things.
Yeah. One of the big weaknesses in cognitive science, which is an area that's boomed in the last 30, 40 years, and we're in our firm, Second Road, very, very involved in it. But if I tell you our mission, it'll give you our view. Our mission is to help groups of people think together more effectively. So if you look at cognitive science, its model of the human being is primarily individualistic. If you look at stories, you know, even popular books on creativity, they'll take Einstein or, you know, a great scientist, and they will give you an individual case study, as if we think on our own. Now, we don't think on our own. We never have and we never will, which was one of the great findings a guy called Thomas Kuhn made when he wrote a famous book called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. Kuhn looked back as a historian and said, well, how did scientists discover stuff? And he had two major breakthroughs, one of which was the famous invention of the paradigm shift. But the other one was, well, they always did it in groups. It was actually collective. It was a group of friends talking. Now, one of those became famous and the others didn't. So dialogue and conversation
is building on what's gone before.
Well, yes. Once we say that in essence creativity is a conversation, it's a social act, then that's a present and a past social act. You know, I'm part of a tradition, and I'm part of a present community.
Now, the image of God, we're told from the biblical picture, is a tarnished image. How does that affect, for instance, institutions and companies and that sort of fallenness?
It's a really good question. I think that, by and large, most Christians are too hung up on sin. And you know, people who talk about applying Christianity at work, I have very sad examples of people who essentially say, you know, my role, because work is tarnished and organisations are tarnished, my role there is some kind of audit policeman checking on everybody and stopping people drinking too much at work or swearing, which is just pathetic. It's much more important to declare the positive. Times are tough and life is tough and change is tough and people need hope. They need to be told there's a point to trying to improve the system. There's a point to trying to develop human beings. Now, Christianity's got the big answer to that point, which is a guy rose from the dead. And that makes everything, far from being pointless, it makes everything extremely pointed and focused. So the way I would answer your question is that, to me, the prime effects of the fall are a loss of faculty. Where, in other words, we will have frustration. Nothing will work quite like what we do. It's all, to me, that's all images of death. But it doesn't define me. What defines me is the resurrection of Jesus that says the main point is life and death is a minor intrusion that'll go away one day.
You tell the story of the Tower of Babel out of the book of Genesis to explain how communication is a critical thing in modern companies. Can you tell us what you mean?
Yes. God, in the story of the Tower of Babel, essentially wanted to frustrate the efforts of these people for reasons of judgment. Yeah. Now, if you think about that and you think, well, how is God going to frustrate their efforts? He could have sent a plague or sent an army or sent a storm or all sorts of things which would be cataclysmic thunderbolts to knock them off their perch. He didn't do any of those things. All he did was he stopped them talking to each other. And that was enough for them to actually become totally ineffective. And that goes back to your earlier question, that enterprise is communal. Now, Cut the community, cut the conversation, and the enterprise will become cancerous. It'll begin to tumble into itself, because what it will lose is one of the great goals of creativity and design, and that is order. The whole, essentially, design is an aesthetic task. Aesthetics means the love of beauty, and beauty means order. And so once disorder comes in and fragmentation comes in, things become chaotic. People still working, but it's chaos, and that's the Tower of Babel. And the modern organization, I mean, every single client, major client that we deal with, if you ask them what are their present issues and problems, half of them will be Tower of Babel. We don't know how to talk to each other.
Does the art of, or the act of creation, involve a sort of decreation, a destructiveness that implies almost violence?
Yeah, the guy called Schumpeter famously put forward the theory of creative destruction in organisations, and I think even better than Schumpeter was Coleridge, the great poem Kubla Khan, which has this idea of a seething volcanic esemplastic source of energy that breaks stuff down and lets them. Coleridge's image was heat, that heat allows things to metamorphosize, and so once they get hot enough, the structures begin to break down, and then that allows a recrystallization and restructures to occur, which is the act of the imagination, what he called the primary imagination. So it's in the nature of things, it's in the nature of the creative act, that it is always the presupposition, the condition that makes it available, is that I begin to unframe, break up fixed ways of looking at things. And that can be seen as being negative, but essentially I would say it's actually an aspect of growth. We always grow by breaking something down and then it spurts out again.
Tony, it seems that you're often drawing on biblical principles and applying those to modern companies and systems. But isn't it the case that those principles, the biblical principles, are an antithesis of modern business practices? So I'm thinking of things like competitiveness, ruthlessness, profit motive, those sorts of things.
No, actually. I'd have to reframe your question.
Please do.
I have never actually applied biblical principles to what I do. Now, that might sound strange, because since a young age I've had a deep burning faith. And for decades I had a way of engaging that I couldn't explain, but I could now. And the way I explain it is this. When I was younger, I thought the world had a huge sacred and secular split, and that going into the world of secular organisations was hostile territory for a person of faith. And I reframed that about 25 years ago, and I began to discover that the whole world is God's oyster. You can never get away from God. He's too big. So what that meant was, rather than applying biblical principles, I began to discover them. I discovered he was everywhere. He was in competitiveness. He was in mergers and acquisitions. He was in bankruptcy. He was in innovation. There was no experience that I could have where I couldn't have this aha, where I saw a deep principle, governing principle, which I saw was shadowing God. And it was shadowing God not in a way that it was disobeying him. It might have been distorted, but it was shadowing a divine principle. And this astonished me. I never expected, you know, as a younger Christian, I expected to see God in a sunrise, but never in a corporate structure.
What has your Christian faith given you in your life?
I think it's given me an anchor, and it's given me a context. It's given me just a huge mental frame that's bigger than me, that I'm walking inside. I'm walking inside someone else's story. I didn't write the story, and that's fantastic. Now, it's not, going back to what I said about authority, it's such a big space that the invitation is for me to write my story inside God's big story. But that's what faith has given me.
Well, that was Tony Goldsby-Smith from Second Road. I hope you can join me next time when I'm going to be speaking to Michael Schluter from Relationships Global. Michael is from the UK. He has spent decades looking at the idea of relational capital. He has lots of challenging things to say to help us build better families, communities, and businesses. Hope you can join me then.